Hi, I'm Ray Hager with the Reno Gazette Journal, and welcome to an all-new edition of Nevada Newsmakers. Today, we're going to take a break from politics and talk about the most socially significant sporting event in Nevada's history. That's the Johnson Jeffries fight. Happened 100 years ago in Reno. Our guests today are Terry and Tommy Lane of Let's Get It On Promotions and author Guy Clifton. And on our pundit panel today, we have Mary Lau, John Sandy, and Nick Vanderpool. So let's get it on with an all-new edition of Nevada News.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, the world's largest industrial park, the resort at Red Hawk, the Whittemore Peterson Institute, where today's discoveries are tomorrow's cure, and the Las Vegas Review-Journal and ReviewJournal.com.
Championship courses, nature's beauty, and life's distractions fading away.
The resort at Red Hawk, consistently voted top golf course in Northern Nevada.
Welcome to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, the crossroads of Western States distribution. From here at the USA Parkway Interchange, drivers can reach most locations in the Western region in one day or less. TRI also provides rail service on Union Pacific Rail Main Line and from the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Rail Companies. And with only a 15-minute drive to the Reno Tahoe International Airport, this makes TRI the crossroads of Western States distribution. The Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, building economic prosperity for Nevadans.
This segment of Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you by the international law firm of Greenberg Traurig, serving our community for decades as Nevada lawyers and as Greenberg Traurig since 2005. This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad on No Holds Barred Political Forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
Hi, welcome back to Nevada Newsmakers. Of course, our guests today are Terry and Tommy Lane, Let's Get It On Promotions, and author Guy Clifton. Tommy, let me start with you. In 2 weeks, there's going to be a huge gala celebration in Reno about the 100th year anniversary of the Johnson-Jeffries fight. It's billed as the fight of the century, a black man versus a white man, and racial superiority for many were online with this fight 100 years ago. So tell me what you got planned to commemorate it.
Well, yeah, we have a great weekend set up, several events on Friday night. On the 2nd, we have a gala, which will have memorabilia from the fight displayed at the Grand Sierra. Family members of the principal people who were involved in the fight, Tex Rickard's family will be there, Jack Johnson's family, Jim Jeffries' family will be there, so it'll be a great evening. And then the Saturday night, we'll have a live boxing card on Fox Sports, and it's a co-promotion with Top Rank, they're one of the biggest promotional firms out there right now, so it's going to be a very special celebration.
Okay. Terry, why is this so important to remember 100 years after the fact?
It's very important. I mean, for our community, this was, like you said, not the biggest event that happened in our community, but as far as a social sporting event, I believe there may not have been a bigger one in the world ever. And it happened right here, and it had to happen right here because Nevada at the time was the only state where boxing was actually state-sanctioned and legal, and after this fight, the rest of the country kind of followed into suit. So it's very important, especially for our community, to understand the importance of how we played a role in sports history, boxing history, and American history.
Okay. Now, Guy, you and I have just finished a book, Johnson Jeffries, Dateline Reno, that goes through the history of the fight. Tell me why do you think this is so important?
I think it's so important because really on July 4th, 1910, the eyes of the world were focused on Reno. And it's an amazing story because until 100 years ago today, June 21st, the fight was scheduled to be in San Francisco, and then all of a sudden it's moved to Reno with 3 weeks to go, and it was an incredible undertaking to get the fight to come to Reno, and all the focus of the world. The stories went from the sports page in the Reno papers to the front page, and Reno became the biggest news in the world.
Well, Tommy, about this fight, what gets me is that Jim Jeffries, the white champion, the great white hope, had to lose 100 pounds to fight Jack Johnson, and you know, looking back at history, do you think that his strength was sapped by losing 100 pounds? Was that the key to his loss?
You know, it's hard to tell. You see it all the time, even in today's boxer. With today's boxers, fighters come back past their primes when they shouldn't. You know, it would be interesting to see how the outcome would have been with Jeffries in his prime, but Jack Johnson was very innovative and kind of developed a new style of boxing, and I think Jack Johnson probably would have won hands down either way if it wasn't Jeffries' prime. But yeah, you know, coming back, it's a sad story that's far too often with boxers, and he got it handed to him.
Well, Terry, you know, you talk about a new kind of boxing. Is that before Jack Johnson, boxing was kind of like baseball? It was a defensive show, and with Jack Johnson, he was like a precursor to Muhammad Ali. He had the great footwork. He was a scientific boxer. If you could maybe talk about his style a little bit.
Well, yeah, he was a scientific boxer. He worked off of a jab. He kind of employed the get in there, get inside, throw a lot of punches, and then hold, which you're allowed to do. You know, keep your opponent from punching back. But whatever he did, what Jack Johnson was a genius about was frustrating his opponents. I mean, he probably could have gotten rid of most of them way early on in the fight. He probably could have knocked out Jim Jeffries way earlier than the 15th round, but he just kind of frustrated and toyed with his opponents, made them their own worst enemies, and then he laid it on them. And that's when we all see the great film of the 15th round where he just annihilates Jim Jeffries.
Well, about that film, you know, it was banned in many places. Many people thought it was going to cause riots. And Guy, when the black man Johnson beat the white man Jeffries, racial riots broke out across the nation, which led to many deaths. If you could talk about that, why that's so important today.
Absolutely. There was, it was a fight that the public based on racial superiority, and Jim Jeffries was labeled the Great White Hope to try to bring back the world's heavyweight championship, the most important title in all of sports in that day, to the white race. And when that didn't happen, there was violence against blacks. There was black on black violence. There was white on black violence all across the country. And it was an incredible scene that lasted for weeks. The fight films ended up being banned because the powers that be didn't want the world to see a black man beating a white man in a boxing match. So there was another 20-some years, 30 years, until fight films were allowed to be transported against state lines again.
Well, in the research for the book, what I learned is that the entire world was almost the racism permeated the entire world. This is the time when we had colonial powers through Europe and the United States, where mostly white people dominated black people. We had this was the time of the Belgian Congo, a little tiny country like Belgium running the Congo in Africa. We have the British Empire. The United States was at its height of empire. It ruled over indigenous people in Hawaii and the Philippines and Puerto Rico. It was just it was a white world in 1910. And let's stop right there. We'll pick this up for our second half of this talk about the greatest fight in the history of Nevada right after these few messages.
To contact Nevada Newsmakers, call 775-857-2244 or go to NevadaNewsmakers.com.
And our 2010 TV spot, we wow them with stuff they don't need. Like a year supply of fruitcake, a pooch, and a health insurance plan for just $29.95.
A reenactment not far from the truth. Question the company and their plan.
Everything has a beginning. Take rodeo.
You're a rancher. There's work to be done, so you start that wild colt. It becomes a challenge, a competition. It becomes rodeo. The Reno Rodeo. 10 days and nights of high-flying, gritty, real Western fun. Join us June 17th to the 26th for the wildest rides on the planet. The best seats are going fast. Call or log on today. The Reno Rodeo, 7 p.m., June 17th to the 26th.
Now, bull riding, that was just a dare.
So, who do you use for workers' comp?
Pro Group Management.
Yeah, I've heard of them. They help to grow your trucking business?
You bet. Employee background checks, safety training. My claims even went down.
Sounds great, but expensive.
Well, they saved me 25% and my rates haven't gone up in, oh, about 10 years.
So do they work with builders?
Sure do.
That works for me.
Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
In 2010, we triple our profits with a new thing we call a website. They get fruitcake, a pooch, and a health insurance plan for just $29.95.
A reenactment not far from the truth. Question the company and their plan.
This segment of Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you by the international law firm of Greenberg Traurig, serving our community for decades as Nevada lawyers and as Greenberg Traurig since 2005. And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
Hi, welcome back to Nevada Newsmakers. Our guests today are Terry and Tommy Lane of Let's Get It On Promotions and author Guy Clifton. Tommy, sitting on President Obama's desk is a pardon of Jack Johnson, because after he won this fight and was was so notorious as champion, the United States government went after him and convicted him on false charges under the Mann Act. He had to flee the country. He went to Canada, France, Mexico, and when he came back to the U.S., he spent a year in Leavenworth prison, trumped up charges. Do you think that this pardon for Jack Johnson will ever be signed by this president or another president?
Unfortunately, I don't think it'll be signed by this president. It's a shame. It's mind-boggling, and it doesn't make really any sense. What we've gathered, it's kind of a political decision. Barack Obama, being African-American president, maybe doesn't want to get involved with pardoning an African-American. He feels that he may get some repercussions. But what I say to that is, you know, John McCain and Peter King, two white Republicans, are the one who sponsored this and are pushing it. So,
do you think that might be a reason why Obama is not signing the pardon, because it's pushed by Republicans?
You know, I don't see how that would flow. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. See, I just don't know. He should pardon him. Jack Johnson should be pardoned. You know, it's as easy as just signing something and really pardoning a black guy in America's history.
Okay, now Terry, Jack Johnson was not a popular figure in his day. White people despised him, and a lot of black people didn't like him either, because he lived such a wild lifestyle. He loved fast cars and fast women, and he loved to party. He had his own nightclub, Cafe de Champion in Chicago. Do you think that his lifestyle is a reason why he's not being pardoned?
Well, he was very out there, and he really rubbed people the wrong way. But that was back then. You know, he wasn't a choir boy. I'm not saying he was a choir boy, but that was back then. Looking back, when I've studied Jack Johnson, he was way ahead of his time. He spoke English, French, and Spanish. He loved fine wines. He loved the finer things in life, and he could just made no apologies about being the way he was. But he didn't violate the Mann Act. I mean, it was trumped up. He really didn't do that. And why today? Today we should look back at Jack Johnson, and I'm not sure why. I don't want to get off on a rant here. There's a lot of fanfare about Jackie Robinson. Jack Johnson was decades before Jackie Robinson. Jack Johnson did a lot more for African-American athletes than Jackie Robinson, and way before that. But we should be looking at him as a hero. He's one of my personal heroes. He's an American hero, a true American. And like my brother just said, there's no reason we shouldn't execute the pardon, just get it done.
Okay, now I don't want to miss talking about Jim Jeffries. Guy, Jim Jeffries, again, he had to lose 100 pounds for this fight. It was the only fight that he lost, and it really defined his career. If he wouldn't have taken this fight, he would be remembered in history as one of the greatest boxers of all time. But now he's remembered as a bum, as a big tomato can, because he got his beat so badly by the black champion.
Absolutely, and it's one of the great tragedies in boxing, is that Jim Jeffries, when he retired in 1904, was undefeated. He'd never been knocked off his feet. He was considered one of the greatest champions of all time. So now, really, only the most diehard boxing historians will look back at that and see how great he was during his prime. And, you know, to come back 5 years later, 6 years later, after you're retiring, to go through what he had to go through to lose all the weight and everything, and to not have a single tune-up fight or anything for that, there's really no way, looking at it in hindsight, that he could have won that fight. You're going against a world champion at the top of his game, and you don't even have a tune-up fight for it. There was no way he was going to win that fight, and it's really tragic because in his day he was probably one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Well, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was saying, Ray, you know, he was, I agree with Guy, he really had no chance of winning the fight, but because of the racial superiority thing, he was the betting favorite.
10-6, 10-7.
And, you know, gosh, if I just had a time machine, I'd bet the farm on Jack Johnson go back in 1910. But, you know, a lot of the busboys in town here who knew, you know, who followed and loved Jack Johnson, they all got their money together, and a lot of people made a lot of money betting on Jack Johnson. So
that's the smart money. You know, the thing about Jim Jeffries that strikes me is that he had a reputation as a welcher, because before he could fight in Reno, he had to alleviate a court case where he owed the Louvre Gambling Hall $5,000, which is a lot of money in those days. And so he came into the fight as a welcher because he skipped out on his gaming bill, just like a lot of athletes do today. If you could, how is he like athletes today, Guy, to wrap it up?
Well, he really is a lot like athletes today, Jack. Jim Jeffries, where he would gamble. A lot of the athletes gamble. Michael Jordan does on the golf course. You know, Charles Barkley owed some money to one of the Vegas casinos. There's a guy from the Celtics that just is in court now, Antoine Walker, that owes a lot of money there. So that's nothing unusual. Gambling and sports has kind of always gone hand in hand.
You know, it seemed to me, to wrap it up, one of the reasons why Jeffries didn't win the fight is when he got to Reno, he never trained. He was addicted to fishing. It was like it was cocaine to him. Every morning, instead of, he'd train a little bit, then he'd go fishing.
Yeah. When he got to Reno, Reno seemed to embrace Johnson a little bit more than Jeffries. Jeffries was kind of standoffish.
You're right.
But John, I mean, Reno did kind of take to Johnson a little bit more, but, you know.
Because he was a rock star.
He was a rock star of the day.
Yeah. We've got to wrap it up right there. We're going to come back with the pundit panel. We're going to talk about the Harry Reid, Sharon Engle slugfest.
South Reno's hotspot for food, fun, and friends is the Tamarack Junction. Enjoy great food 24 hours a day in the dining car restaurant. For a quick bite and the best sandwiches in town, it's the Whistle Stop Deli. And for the best appetizers and menu selections and a large variety of cocktails, beer, and martinis, it's Sully Sports Bar and Grill. The Tamarack Junction is your junction for fun, just north of the Summit Sierra on South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
On the next Face-to-Face, we'll put another campaign ad through a reality check. Who is telling the truth and who's not? We'll also take you behind the day's political headlines. It's all in the next Face-to-Face.
Hi, I'm Trina Stevens with Internet Auto Rent and Sales, your one and only new car alternative store. At Internet, you always get more for your money, like payments as low as $99 a month and priced thousands less than our competitors, with savings up to 40% and even 50% less than new. You can get the vehicle you really want, equipped the way you want, and fitting nicely in your budget. So remember, why pay the difference if you can't tell the difference at Internet Auto Rent and Sales?
You know, as you drive along I-80 and you see the steam coming up from the ground, it may not look like much, but it's geothermal energy. Geothermal could mean over 16,000 construction jobs in Nevada. Harry Reid saw the potential for geothermal before just about anybody else. It's Nevada jobs, it's Nevada energy. Senator Reid is making that happen.
I'm Harry Reid, and I approve this message.
Celebrate summer with delicious barbecue, cool brews, and sizzling rockin' blues at the Great El Dorado Barbecue Brews and Blues Festival, June 25th and 26th.
The Fact Finder Team, only on News 4.
This segment is brought to you by the Whittemore Peterson Institute, where today's discoveries are tomorrow's cures. This is Nevada Newsmakers.
Welcome to our pundit panel today. First, let me introduce Mary Lau, the president and CEO of the Retail Association of Nevada, Nick Vanderpool, consultant, and John Sandy IV, attorney at law. Welcome to you all.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Mary, let me start with you to get this going. Could you assess maybe what you think of the first week of the Sharon Angle versus Harry Reid campaign for U.S. Senate?
Sort of exactly what you thought it would be, because part of what Reid's trying to do is define Sharon Angle before she has a chance to define herself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he couldn't do anything till he knew who the person was, but he had everything in the can ready to go just in case. So he's trying to do an indelible impression of her right now and hope he can do it while she's raising money, but she's getting a lot of help coming around. And he's had some missteps. I noticed he changed that thing from the saunas for the prisoners, because it wasn't saunas, it was sweat lodges, and he was bumping up against Native American tradition then, so now he's just talking about massages. And that bill wasn't there, but that's politics. If you mention it, it becomes fact. It was never introduced as a bill, but it's trying to define her.
Okay, Nick, of course, everyone knows that Harry Reid has $25 million. Sharon Angle was on Fox News this past week promoting her website. She's got great consultants to help her with new media fundraising. How do you think that's going to go?
Well, my understanding, she did reach her $1 million mark. So fundraising is going well, and I've watched her website over a period of like a half an hour and just press refresh, and you watch, she's receiving those $20, $30 contributions, and that's what's going to help. And it's all the outside money coming in as well. There's a lot of outside money coming into Nevada, and it'll be interesting how it plays out.
How do you think, John, this, you know, groundswell, Harry Reid is the incumbent. Of course, everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people seem to be angry with our federal government. How does that impact his race?
Oh, I think it affects it tremendously. Here you have the majority leader of the United States of America on his heels and biting, kicking and scratching to, you know, win his reelection. And I think one thing's for certain is that money is not going to be the issue of the person who loses. I think both sides are going to have more than enough money to get their voice out there and make their case of why they're the better candidate. But yeah, I think that the negativity towards our federal government right now is going to affect Harry Reid a lot, and that's what he's going to spend the next several months trying to convince the Nevadans that things are going to get better and that he's the guy to do the job.
Okay, if what would Mary? If Sharon Angle wins, our senatorial team for Nevada will be Sharon Angle and John Ensign. Could you give me a strength factor on those two together?
Well, I know there's a lot of fear that all of a sudden we're going to have a wounded person in John Ensign, if he even is in office still, and a newbie. But you have to remember, the newbie from Alaska has taken home more money for Alaska than Harry Reid has for Nevada. So that one is—it's kind of, they're using the pork to buy votes. So there's going to be an awful lot of exchanges and awful lot of stuff going on. But we're definitely going to start from scratch again, as far as that goes, unless Ensign has a miracle, which I don't anticipate.
Okay, well, let me change the subject, Nick. Last week I covered a town hall meeting at a middle school in Reno for Rory Reid, Harry's son, who's running for governor as the Democrat. He said he doesn't want to raise taxes to help education, but the teachers union, who have backed him, say they want taxes raised for education. What does this put young Rory in a pickle?
Oh, absolutely. He has to determine whether or not, you know, what his solution is to the budget shortfall. And right now, conservative talk is working, and conservative talk is no new taxes. And you can say the same thing. And furthermore, he's also running away from his dad. You have the two Reeds don't make a right. And so, but you have the same thing in the GOP side, where you have the Sandoval and Angle, where there is a separation there, where like Sandoval wants more moderates versus Angle is more conservative. We all know that. But when you get two Reeds at the top of the ticket, you want to separate.
Well, John, that's interesting, because when Rory Reid brought out his first bumper sticker, actually it was a pretty cool, it was a school bus, but it said Rory 2010 and made no mention of his last name. It's almost like he'd be better off if he was Rory Jones or, you know, Rory Smith. What? Maybe if you could comment on that.
I definitely think that would. I guess what he does have going for him is that Rory is somewhat memorable. It's not a John that gets lost in the crowd. So he can try and run off of his first name and associate that first name and not kind of attached to his father, because I think it is a detrimental to him in this race and having two Reeds on the ticket. So he's doing, you know, it's smart political strategy on ways to try and make yourself more appealing to a broad base.
Okay, now Mary, Nick brought up perhaps not a uniformity or a united GOP front with Sharon Engel and Brian Sandoval at the top of the ticket. What do you feel about those? One's a conservative, one's a moderate. Are they going to join together? Are they going to split votes, or just?
I don't think they'll split votes, because it's either a Republican, Democrat, or independent ticket. I mean, you're either going to vote one way or the other. Because if you look at the elections, Nick and I were talking about it in the break room, you have a very conservative Ty Cobb losing his race, and you have a moderate winning his race in Joe Hardy. So the electorate is just all over the place. And I don't know how much coattails there will be. But the coattails will be developed during the election. And on the teachers' union, they turned around and endorsed Rory.
Right. Yeah. So. Well, who else are they going to endorse?
Yeah, exactly. You got two teachers. Candidates yeah. saying no, but the difference is, I don't care who governor is, it's still what the legislature is made up of, if there's going to be taxes or not.
Okay, we got to cut it right there. We'll be right back for a few, just to close up, Nevada Newsmakers, right after these few messages.
Imagine looking 10 years younger in about an hour. Welcome to a review of the Quick Lift, a revolutionary procedure that allows such miracles to happen every day. I feel like I went back in time. I love it.
The Quick Lift was my answer.
I should have done it years ago. I just love it. Using a mild numbing agent, our Quick Lift doctors gently lift and tighten the sagging skin around the face and neck.
I was looking tired and just worn out. My chin was starting to hang down.
I had all this sagging skin under my cheeks and jawline, and my neck was terrible.
I think one of the big advantages that almost all of my patients tell me is that with a Quick Lift, because it's an upward advancement procedure instead of a backward advancement procedure, they like the fact that they just look very, very natural.
The breakthrough Quick Lift procedure only takes about an hour. But listen to this. You can be back to normal and can look up to 10 years younger in a matter of days.
Yeah, it makes me feel so much better. And my husband loves it. He's like, you look beautiful.
The very next day, I could see an amazing difference.
I feel like I went back in time.
When I look in the mirror, I see myself 12 years ago.
This is something that really works. The Quick Lift has changed my whole outlook on life.
Oh my gosh, I look and feel so much younger. It's incredible. Discover the youth, beauty, and confidence that thousands of men and women from across the country are now enjoying. Don't wait to look great. Call today at 1-800-321-LIFT for a free and private Quick Lift evaluation. That's 1-800-321-LIFT. Call now.
Thanks for watching. Tomorrow we're going to have guests from Nevada's Brainiac Barrio or the Davison Institute. Our guests will be Bob Davison, Colleen Harrison, and student Casey Ackman. That's all coming up tomorrow on an all-new Nevada.